This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. At some point in the misty past, poetry shifted from popular culture to academic enterprise. Lucky for North Carolinians, poetry is finding its way back to the streets across the state. Carrboro's poet laureate, Salisa Steele, is putting poetry in plain sight with posters on walls and buses with the West End Poetry Festival. Salisa Steele is here, along with celebrated poet, Duke Professor Emeritus James Applewhite. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
And also with us, Elena Sherrill, who teaches at Johnson & Wales University in Charlotte. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So let me start with you, Salisa. Where did the idea come from, the impetus behind the West End Poetry Festival?
I actually inherited the West End Poetry Festival. This is the 9th offering of it, so it's something that the town of Carrboro has been doing for a while. I think it's just part of evidence of the town's support for the arts in general. They also have a music festival, film festival, all sorts of things. So the poetry festival is something that has been around, and the idea is to basically invite poets, get people who like to hear poetry, people who may not know that they like to hear poetry yet, to come in and enjoy it.
Jim Applewhite, you've been writing poetry for 40 years or so. What about this? Poetry is alive and well, Salisa says, in Carrboro. How about the state? How about the United States of America? How do we feel about poetry?
Poetry is certainly alive and well. In many cases, writing programs where they're offering an MFA, as at, say, Greensboro and at Wilmington, and many other places across the country. And that has its positives and its negatives. In some ways, it takes the poet out of the community and specializes her or him in this particular voice and technique. At Duke, we don't have an MFA program, but I taught poetry writing along with literature, and I enjoyed literature as much as poetry, because poetry is literature in a sense.
Well, Elena, let me ask you, you've been working on a dissertation about poetry in place. James Applewhite, of course, famous for creating a sense of place in poetry that is all about the human condition but located. So what do we do if we're in a place like North Carolina? Is there something special about this place? And sort of what's the impact of place on poetry in a place like North Carolina?
Well, North Carolina is special because of the bioregion is just so distinct. And the authors that I'm looking at are Great Smoky Mountain poets, Robert Morgan, Ron Rash, and Kay Byer, and just how those, the Appalachian Hills, the Tuckasegee River for one, Watauga County for Ron Rash, how those things affect their poetry, and then how they show up and impact the reader.
So, Salisa, how do you do this? How do you reflect some of that if you sort of agree with all of this, that this is kind of the importance of poetry and why it's important to put it on buses and walls? How are you going to do that? How's that going to be reflected in the festival?
Well, so, yeah, I mean, the festival is put together with this idea of we have a very rich range of poets. So we have people like Jim Applewhite, who's been writing and publishing for several decades now. We have people who are still finishing up their undergraduate degrees who are poets, and trying to be very sort of ecumenical and inviting and welcome all types of poets, all types of poetry, people at different places in their career. And just, I think, to a certain extent, by pulling together this sampling, I mean, then we are giving people a sampling of North Carolina poetry and North Carolina poets. It's not necessarily what people would think of if you just sort of think about regional or southern poetry, but all of these poets coming and participating in the festival really are North Carolina poets.
Well, Jim Applewhite, can you give us a sample of poetry right now? Can I ask you to read for us?
Sure. This poem is from my new book, Cosmos, a Poem. We're in Hawaii, my wife and I, and we're in a 17th floor hotel tower overlooking the bay. We've been out to see the Arizona, the sunken Arizona, and we've seen the place where Burt Lancaster and Deborah Carr lay when they were being filmed, From Here to Eternity. The lights are like strings of rosaries out there, a hotel tower above Oahu. While blue-black transparent night floods into Waikiki, street lights along the Manalani Heights come on. Here on the balcony, I see the dingy neighborhoods toward Pearl Harbor we drove this afternoon. They shine afar with strung bulbs, and fainter rosaries of light bead farthest mountains. Below by the harbor, we walked before sunset. Within those dimly sparkled arms of land, a few breakers whiten. Yesterday we saw the bay where Bert and Deborah lay. You vowed your love from here to eternity. Only from the long line of spray I hear a roar of beginning, of armies clashing. By our own made lights we watch creation spill its accidental beauty. These necklace-linking bulbs shine back like galaxies from the dark of Earth beside the ancient crater of Diamond Head. The other way, an old war's at anchor, Arizona submerged, leaking oil up toward the stars.
James Applewhite reading his poem A Hotel Tower Above Oahu from his latest volume of poetry, Cosmos, a poem. Jim, there are a lot of deep ideas, a lot of deep thoughts that come to my mind as I hear that poem. If I look at the words, there's a lot of very particular description about a particular scene that any of us might have seen from that same window. When you look out the window, do the thoughts begin to come to you, or do you think about describing what meets the eye first?
In my work, there's a lot of intellectual preparation and thought behind it, but the good poems, there's a particular occasion which releases those, like the oil coming up from Arizona. I'm interested in cosmology. I'm interested in popular culture, like this Steven Spielberg movie. What was the one where they come back and the lights answer Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that these lights here on our Earth are our human reflection of the galaxies out there. We want to speak back to find location and identity and connection. And my poems are about connections, and it's connections of things I've read and theorized about, but the occasion and the feeling and the music have to be in that particular location.
A connection juxtaposed to one of the most wrenching disconnections, the disconnection of war.
Absolutely.
So it's beautifully wrought. Elena, was I right in my introduction in saying that somehow poetry changed, it shifted from popular culture to the academy? It sort of got away from us somehow. Was that a fair statement? At some point along the way.
I think historically maybe. I feel like it's not away from pop culture, though. I feel like if you're in the middle of an open mic night, which, you know, I'm a part of on a regular basis, you have people in doing spoken word and, you know, lyrics to songs, which is poetry. And I think that I don't think it's really gotten away from it too far.
Well, qua poetry, I mean, I think that's sort of it. Wouldn't you say, Salisa, the fact is there is nothing in popular culture, particularly in music comes to mind immediately, that isn't deeply poetic. Right, it's there, but we don't think about it as poetry.
I agree. I think you're right, and I think that, you know, on this question of sort of the state of poetry, I think there tend to be two assessments. One is that it's flourishing, and you have evidence of things like all the MFA programs, all the presses, all of that. And then you also have the assessment, well, it's unpopular, and, you know, it's not selling, people aren't reading it. And I think that I don't find either one of those assessments particularly satisfying, and it's not even because they potentially conflict. I don't think they do. I think both are true. But I think it's just that, for me, that sort of gets at poetry by looking at the products or the outputs. It sort of treats it like a business. And for me, I'm really much more interested in the poems that make up poetry. The words are what attract me, both when I'm trying to write and when I'm reading.
Well, and the impact on the creator, on the poet. Jim, do you think that we're just doing a disservice to students by not making the connection to them between what they deeply do appreciate in pop culture and poetry, which has the ability, I think, to transform the poet if they're conscious of what they're doing?
That's true, and also the community. I think that with Durham in particular, the invisible fence between the university and the town has been a problem for me. I'm often more recognized in other cities than in Durham because there has been this disconnect. I'm been walled away in the Duke world. I'm not there anymore. I want to reconnect with Durham, and I'm so grateful for this poetry festival to give me a chance to read close by, you know. And I would love to get together with the Durham community more. I feel that it is happening to some extent with the 27 Views of Durham, for example. A couple of years ago, there was a poem of mine in there. But I love Durham. Yeah. It's my home. And I would love to be the Durham poet more than I am.
Well, I mean, let me ask you this bluntly. Is that Durham's fault, or do you need to be more aggressive?
to some extent, the community has to reach out to the poet. It's hard to read your poetry on the street corner. You need an audience that's there and receptive. And some poets are better at going out and creating venues for themselves. I tend not to do that. I mean, the knowledge that and the effort that goes into poetry is a lifetime consuming occupation itself. And I applaud Kristin completely for this poetry festival, whereby you were bringing the poets into the community, and that's a wonderful paradigm.
Well, so Lisa, what about that this idea too, that maybe we just better make a connection with younger folk or people who thought, if you ask them, do you like poetry, they'd say no, then point out how much poetry is embedded in their lives and in their iPods, and then to some extent transform that into you're not the consumer, you're also the creator.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to take people, is to really have them engage in the art. And I think by, you know, doing things like, if we can put poetry out there where, yeah, so maybe you're not going to have the poet on the street corner, but if you can have the poster on the bus, or if you can have a poem chalked on the sidewalk, well, then someone who's not usually going to go pull a poetry book off the shelf is going to encounter poetry and may come to see that and think, you know what, I can pick up a piece of chalk. I can write a poem on the sidewalk, too.
Can I get you to read a poem of yours?
Yes, I'd be happy to. So, it gets explained in the poem, but the title is French for Evolution of the Skeleton in the Fetus. This is Evolution du Squelette chez le Fœtus. The exhibition opens on a rainy Thursday, and you go alone. The current carries couples in a crowd to the right, so you work your way counterclockwise, which is why you see the last photograph first. Baby skeletons on a shelf in a lab, a green phone hanging on a slice of blue wall. You come closer and see, by the placard behind them, you're wrong. Not baby, but fetus skeletons, eight in all, stretched from their womb curl to a strict straightness, a metal rod running from a black stand to each sacrum, the 2- and 3-month-olds under bell jars. This one could be your brother, the one your mother didn't believe in, old as she was, then bled away in the upstairs bathroom while you did biology homework in the kitchen. That was the first time you didn't know what to say to your mother. There would be more times, and then no more. You stand on the slick floor and study the 7-month fetus, his pelvis a butterfly in the picture's center, the last one hidden in part by the vertical of blue wall, suspending the phone, cord intact, perfectly curled, the last one, 9 months, facing down as if to display the 4 plates of his unfused fontanelle, chin down, as if knowing love already silent, undependable as the number no one calls.
So Lisa Steele, Carrboro's Poet Laureate and organizer of this year's West End Poetry Festival, when you take on a poem like that, do you have to cross a threshold? Does this become a challenge for you to delve as deeply into that subject as you had to do to get to the end of that poem?
It is, but I also find that poetry and writing poetry can in some ways kind of free you, because in some ways I'm so engaged in writing the poem that you almost separate yourself from the content that you're dealing with, and you really are sort of following the language and trying not to really think about what's happening and finding this entry into a subject matter like a picture that I actually saw, and then sort of creating the poem to go with it.
Elena, can I get you to read a poem for us?
Sure. This is called The Road. 226A out of Marion, North Carolina is so steep that large trucks must choose a different route. The road to Boone is 61 miles. The pavement on Stockton Street is fresh and flat and perfect for roller skating. Crush and run gravel is difficult to run on. The road to the beach is 261 miles. It's 245 miles from Charlotte to Atlanta. My Rand McNally is shredded and chewed on the corners, but I can still find Nebraska. The road is lined with moss where ants carry a snake carcass uphill. Asphalt is hot on bare feet. Asphalt is hot through my shoes. Wavy lines or tears blur my vision on the road out of Cullowhee. 1923 is a desolate stretch of highway. The National Park Service will never complete the road to nowhere. The temporary bridge on NC-12 is covered in rust. Google Maps replaced my Rand McNally. The road to Dad is 4 miles. Asphalt is softer than concrete and easier on the joints. Descendants walk the road to nowhere to decorate tombstones. Dirt is softer than asphalt and better than any kind of gravel. The road to Raleigh is 159 miles. Trade Street and Tryon Street were Indian trading paths. The parking lot of the Greyhound bus station on Trade Street is crush and run gravel. The Greyhound bus station parking lot is dark at night. Old 321 was more fun to drive than the new road. The Washington Bomb Bridge is mile 23 of the Outer Banks Marathon. The Washington Bomb Bridge is steep and the wind on top is loud. The man in the wheelchair, the man with no legs, sits at the end of the Washington Bomb Bridge to cheer for runners. Clyde drove for Greyhound from Charlotte to Atlanta for 32 years. Clyde, North Carolina, is on Highway 1923. The road seems to end in Cullowhee, but it doesn't. Dad drives to Raleigh only sometimes. The S turns out of Rodanthe, wash into the ocean once a year. Shoal Mill Road between Blowing Rock and Fosco is curvy. Dad drove the road between the school and orthodontist every 3 weeks. 321 has steep runaway truck ramps. Truckers are susceptible to heart attacks. Runners are susceptible to heart attacks. Flat Top Road ribbons around the mountain. The elevation of the Blue Ridge Parkway at Aho Gap is 3,262 feet. Runners sob when they pass the man on the Washington Bomb Bridge.
Elena Sherrill, who is a poet and a professor at Johnson Wales University in Charlotte. She is one of my guests, along with James Applewhite, poet and professor emeritus at Duke, and Salisa Steele, Carrboro's poet laureate, who has been working to get together. All three poets, in fact, are going to be at the West End Poetry Festival in Carrboro, October 17th through the 18th. It is free and open to the public. We have information at our website, stateofthings.org. And I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank
Frank.
You.
Thank you for listening to The State of Things. As I said, you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Alex Curley is our intern. Robin Copley is our technical director. Brent Wolf is our news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.